Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
Today is episode 9, Long-Term Plans for Short-Term Rentals.
Hey, well, welcome. This is Color Country Politics. I'm Jenny Hendricks here with co-host Jesse Harris.
Howdy.
And today we are super excited. We've got Ron Adams and Scott Phillips from the Cedar City Council. And our topic today is the proposed ordinance at the city that has to do with short-term rentals, so commonly called Airbnbs, VRBOs, and so forth. One of the reasons I wanted to have City Council come and sort of explain what is happening is I'm trying to pull back the curtain and have our City Council members educate us as to kind of what is the process that we go through when there is a change to an ordinance or maybe a brand new ordinance. I know that as a council, you've been accused of acting rashly. in a self-interested fashion. And so I wanted to just sort of have a conversation about this particular ordinance because it's kind of front and center. This is what we're dealing with right now. So could you kind of take us like from the top? Why are we even talking about this? How did this even come up as a topic in Cedar City?
Well, I can speak from my point of view, and then Councilman Adams can certainly address it, but I came on the council just almost a year ago, and one of the things, I've been very involved in tourism for a lot of years because of my work with the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and had a lot of association with the state and county and local tourism folks, and I wanted to make sure that those folks that were doing the Airbnbs and the HomeAways and the TripAdvisors and Bookings, all of those kind of things, and there's a lot of them out there, that we were on a level playing field, that they were paying the appropriate transient room tax or the appropriate sales and use tax that other lodging entities are required to pay. So I approached the city staff and asked about this, and they didn't have anything necessarily on the books in the way of an ordinance, so it was my suggestion that we move in that direction for the sole purpose of making sure that everyone was on the same level playing field.
Right.
That was almost a year ago.
Okay.
And he started working on it, and then Tyler brought something to us, I believe in March it was of last year.
Tyler Romerl, the city attorney.
City attorney, excuse me. And then it was enacted on, and that was the first beginning. So then when other processes started happening, the first I heard about the current issues was, I remember distinctly, I was at a final Friday art walk in June, and I had some neighbors come and approach me and say, "Do you know what's happening up on Ridge Road right now?" And I went, "No, I imagine people are living and driving their vehicle." I didn't know. And that's when I first heard about it.
Uh-huh.
And so we started looking at it at that time. So this has been six, 8 months in the process.
Right.
This is not an overnight situation.
Sure. And this is something that is going to come in front of the Planning Commission in December, and then it'll come before the City Council in January. Mm-hmm. So this really has, by the time it gets to its final iteration, it will be at least a year long sort of process.
Yes, it will.
So you started out saying that we need to have some kind of equity as far as a level playing field, and I think having that disruption in the ordinance caused people to pay attention, and then they were sort of saying, "Well, wait a second, what is happening in our area?"
Sure.
And so then there were some citizens group that thought we needed to maybe address it further. Is that sort of a fair representation?
Yeah, I think so. Because the disruption came from Tyler's suggestion of putting in a definition to begin with. That's probably a good place to start. Let's define it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put short-term rental definition in there along with the other things that were allowed and in our zoning areas of town, which included all of the zoning areas, with the exception of a few.
So essentially all the residential zones.
Yeah, basically all the residential mm-hmm. zones mm-hmm. and the industrial, and that wasn't included. So that's where that started. And then, as Scott mentioned, this other, you know, issue came up on Ridge Road, and that kind of triggered the movement
yeah.
of the process from that point.
So when that happened, because that group of citizens actually came to a planning commission meeting mm-hmm. and said, you know, hey, this is a concern. We'd like the city to, you know, kind of follow up, and this is something that we need to address. So from that point, which has been months and months and months ago, kind of take us through what has been the process to get to where we are now, where we're basically looking at two kind of different forms of an ordinance, and we're still, you know, getting input and gathering information and so forth. But what's kind of been the time frame, and who's been involved? What's that process?
Well, I think like any issue that comes before a community, you're always going to have a catalyst group, whether it's those skateboarders that want a new skateboard park mm-hmm. or whether it's the people that want a park in their neighborhood and they go and they build Park Discovery, whatever it might happen to be. And so a group of citizens, primarily in the R1 zone that we've talked about on Ridge Road, have been the catalyst behind their wanting to see that something is enacted or fixed regarding short-term rentals, if you will. But there's also been a lot of people that have been quietly mm-hmm. doing short-term rentals in this community for a very long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And with no issues, no problems, quietly doing Airbnbs, renting out one or two rooms of their homes. Mm-hmm. Because we are a tourist town, mm-hmm. because we have the Utah Summer Games, we have the Shakespeare Festival, we have these beautiful natural wonders around yeah. us, people come from around the world yes. to see us and want a place to stay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is not always your traditional bed and breakfast or your hotel mo lodging that they're looking for. So that said, that group has sort of been the catalyst that's been working with us. And they've been working with city staff. Mm-hmm. They've met with, as far as I know, all the council members, I would mm-hmm. say. I know I have been to several people's homes and sat down in their homes where they made presentations and did a PowerPoint presentation. We listened, we talked, we heard their concerns, we drove up and down the streets. So this is not something that we just arbitrarily look at and say, oh, gee, I think we ought to do this or this.
Right.
We really have been trying to address the concerns
sure.
of both sides of yeah. the issue.
And you know, just to that point, I think this is something that is really important to kind of keep in the middle of this conversation, is that you do have some people who feel very strongly
absolutely
for, you know, and against. And I've spoken personally with people who say, this is, you know, I've been doing this for years. My neighbors either don't know because it's a non-issue, or they're fine with it. They don't care. Mm-hmm. And this is subsidizing my income. You know, there was a widow who said, if I can't do this, I cannot make my mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. So you've got these, you know, you've got the whole gambit of situations and perspectives, and you sort of got to thread that needle. So you mentioned Tyler Romerl has been involved. Is there any other city staff, or what other kind of research is being done? What other information, I guess, is coming into this process?
Well, the city engineering department has been heavily involved from the get-go on researching the issues of basically, probably as you mentioned, Jenny, on the private property rights issue and how we need to keep in line with those things as far as regulations in our neighborhoods. Our engineering staff and zoning department mm-hmm. has looked at over and over and tried to, you know, look and see, okay, what are we lacking mm-hmm. in the ordinance, if anything, mm-hmm. and what can we do to make it better if there's something there that we can change and yet still keep respect to the various zones in our community and the things that those people want. And I just might add on this, on the zoning, I kind of went a little different angle with my background too. On the zoning, I started researching the CC&Rs mm-hmm. of particularly the subdivision that the group lives in, because I've worked with CC&Rs in a major subdivision next door to them.
Sure.
And our CCNRs, you know, prohibit a lot of the things that, you know, problems that they were having. And so I spent, I don't know how many hours of time. I know I reviewed over 700 line item entries on the county records.
Oh, my gosh.
Searching for anything in the CCNRs of any other subdivisions that would be applicable before, you know, I got to even the council meeting process. This was back when I was going through Planning Commission to start the process on my research that I did, which was only the beginning. That was just scratching the surface.
No, there's a lot to it. And I wanted to bring up a
No, I was just going to say, I think a lot of council members have done research. I know I have personally looked into issues in Estes Park, Colorado. I've looked at Boulder City, Nevada. I've looked at Park City. I've looked at St. George. I looked at Anaheim, California. I looked at Encinitas, California. I looked at the Grand Tetons up there at Jackson Hole. I wanted to find out what other people had done, were doing, had not done. And I have to say, the gamut is extremely large. Some ban it altogether. Some have done nothing with it. Some open it up to almost all possibilities. But most are finding some way to try and figure out how do we make this work. Because I personally believe that this particular notion of shared housing across the world, whether it's Airbnb or whatever you want to use, is not going away. So we have to embrace the technology and then find a way in which to not lose our community character in the process.
I think that captures the dilemma perfectly. And you had mentioned earlier before we started taping that this really is an issue where technology has kind of outstripped our ordinance, you know, and so we're sort of having this catch-up issue. And it is something that I think communities worldwide are having to deal with. It's not just, you know, in our surrounding neighboring states. It's all over.
Well, and it's fair and just to want to do all kinds of regulations, but we also have to be careful to protect the private property rights. We have to make sure that we don't set up a lot of regulations and policies that we can't enforce.
I think that's something that...
That's the big one.
Yeah.
That is the big one.
Because there are things, you know, that are in the proposals, and I just think enforcement would be a nightmare. It would be impossible, possibly.
Maybe.
And I think because we are in a small community and because everybody is highly sensitive to taxpayer resources and wanting to use those wisely, I mean, how much of the city's resources do we want to spend, you know, on tracking things down, improving things and investigating things?
Here's a notion that at least I think might be worth looking at is there's some ways that technology can combat technology. There are a number of database programs out there now dealing with short-term rentals, and companies that do this, Host Compliance is one, STR Helper is one, there's a number of them. Now, there is a cost associated with that, of course, but if we can figure there's a way where the cost can be come back to us to increase revenues, because there are a lot of short-term rentals right now that are not paying the appropriate fees. And this isn't to penalize anybody. It's just saying you're in business, so you have to pay the appropriate business costs to run your business. There might be a way where we can take some of the data and use it in a proper way to say maybe we can enforce a certain amount of this by using this information. But we certainly don't want to be a policing entity. We come and knock on your door and say, so I'm here to check to see how many people are living with you.
Yes, line up, we're counting noses.
And that's going to be tough. But because I also understand and have a place in my heart for those people that live in those residential neighborhoods.
Sure.
I've likened it a bit, and I don't know where Councilman Adams feels on this, but I've seen this happen over the long haul with long-term rentals. And particularly around some of our older neighborhoods, around the university, where so-and-so has either moved away or passed away. And so somebody will come and buy that home and then rent it to students long term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's now one rental on that street with all the other neighbors. Uh-huh. Then somebody else passes away. And pretty soon, you have five rentals on that street and two long-term residents.
Right.
This sounds like a scenario that plays out in Provo all the time. They have significant problems with that.
Yes, they do. And so we want to make sure that we keep the character of neighborhoods and we don't have the I don't know what you want to call them, but the investors who want to come in and just buy homes for that return on investment and don't have the interests of the neighborhood or the community at heart. It is about how much money can I make off of this.
Yeah. Well, then you end up in a situation where you have an absentee landlord.
Yeah.
They don't care that there's 12 students living in a three-bedroom house.
Correct.
They don't care that there's that many cars parked in driveways and on the streets.
And how many times have we dealt that in council meetings?
Many times.
Yeah. A bunch. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's probably just a symptom of, you know, a need that's not being met. You know, if you're cramming 12 students in that three-bedroom house, it means there weren't enough apartments available.
Right.
If there aren't. If there's a lot of Airbnbs, it means there's not enough, you know, extended stay hotel space to meet those needs.
Well, and it's a different type of experience too. And I use both. I think everybody does. There are times when I leave town and I stay in a hotel and that's the right fit. There are times, you know, when maybe I'm taking my kids and Ken on a vacation you know, and we want to be able to cook and have breakfast and so forth. So I think there's an appropriate place for both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is the reality that we have to look. There has to be the appropriate place for both. But what is that appropriate mix? And I think that is a struggle, because if it was easy, it would have been done a long time ago.
Right, exactly.
but in, you know, in answer to your earlier question about people involved in this, I think the council's been very involved in studying this issue. City staff has looked at it. I know our police department's been looking at it. I know our fire department has, because they have to make sure that these places are safe.
Yes.
And you can accommodate that many people, whatever that number is.
I think that's a really, really important point to make, is in the discussion about private property rights and preserving neighborhoods and sort of that push-pull. You don't want there to be an emergency and have somebody not be able to have proper egress or, you know, something like that. And so I think there's absolutely an appropriate place for the fire department, the police department, you know, our building inspectors to be involved, because one would hope there would never be a tragedy like that. But you want to be prepared and have the appropriate measures in place.
But, you know, one of the things that I think we probably all have in common, and that's why we live here, is because we love the community that we're in. Mm-hmm. And so how do we protect that community that we love and still make sure it can grow and have viability so we and future generations can afford to stay and live here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where building a community and a city, that's what it's all about, is finding that proper mix of vitality and yet keeping the same character of what the history and the legacy of the community is about.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a museum where nothing ever changes, but at the same time, you don't want it to be like Las Vegas where, oh, this building's too old, let's just blow everything up and start over.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. No, I think there is that. And that's one of the things I wanted to have you guys on, because I think there is such a sense of how do we preserve our culture that is so important to so many, recognizing that as a community we are growing. And we are facing, you know, sort of these issues that come with that growth. And it's, we don't have to like it, but it is here. So
I think Utah has been discovered.
Yes.
And Cedar City, I think, is being discovered.
Yes.
Which we've known for a long time. Yes. People say, this is a fantastic place.
Yes.
Look at the natural beauty. This is a great university. There's great culture here. There's all kinds of unlimited recreation. There's beautiful air quality and blue skies. Mm-hmm. So
people
why
are so
wouldn't
friendly.
I want to live here?
Exactly.
So how do we balance that? Just in traffic and in business mix and everything else.
Exactly.
And so
this is just
one of the issues that is facing us
very
now.
Well,
and that's a very key point that the council takes in making decisions on these types of things when they come up is, you know, how are we going to keep our community the way we like our good community?
Right.
It's not a personal thing that Scott has got and wants to do his thing. It's in the best. The five members of the council, I think I can truthfully say, most of the time, I have the interest of everybody involved. Right. But like I said, that's a different group. I mean, here we have a small group of individuals that live in a neighborhood, and then we have another small group that have emailed us or called us on the telephone. Maybe haven't been to the meetings to give their public opinions. And then just maybe I'll touch quickly on the enforcement. You know, we started briefly with suggesting we have an application, which I think is a basic tool to start with. And then the other side of the coin to that is I've received several emails from citizens, unfortunately, that say, you can put an application, you can do whatever you want, but I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah.
And then I'll face the consequences later on. So I don't care what you put on it. I'm still going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
So that's your heavily private property rights citizen that is not really willing to compromise. And it makes it difficult when you're making decisions because, let's say the council was all stuck in a rut on one thing and wouldn't listen to anybody else, you know, what would we have?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it. You have a diversified council.
Yeah.
We all don't think the same.
No.
We don't make the same comments. We don't have the same backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But all the backgrounds together, plus all of the public input and those involved in our community are what makes good ordinances.
Yeah.
If there is, sometimes, I don't know, I'm like you, too many ordinances are not good. You know,
right.
Some things have to come and go with the technology.
Uh-huh.
You know, I removed from an ordinance when I was elected tying up horses to posts in front of businesses downtown that was still in there. I didn't see the need for that anymore. So that's an example of you mentioning technology.
Yeah.
Things do change, and sometimes we have to look at an older ordinance and say, well, wait a minute, but they didn't have the same problems or the same issues.
Yeah.
So we need to readdress
maybe
that.
Maybe not the same solutions.
Yeah, or same solutions that are available
to us.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
You joke about the horses, but I did see a horse tied up in front of the Family Dollar in Enoch once. So that's still a thing.
Still going.
It is a thing. You're in the West, right?
That's great.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, I think the other thing, too, relative to the council and this issue, but all issues, is that we're not elected by districts or areas. We are at large, which means we have to be thinking about the people that live in Mesa Hills at the same time we're thinking about the people that live on 300 East or the people that live in Fiddlers. How is it going to affect the entire community, not just my district that represented me? Because I'm representing
everybody.
All of my constituents out there.
Yeah. No, that's
and I think we try and look at that when we do things. And we're not perfect, heavens sakes. And
that was a newsflash, everybody.
Everybody's watching right now. Well, and I think
Scott's closed.
Whatever we finally do arrive at, that doesn't mean it can't come back and be amended at some future point.
Yeah.
If we find a need, or gee, this isn't functioning like we thought it would, or we made a mistake here, they can be amended. That's a nice thing about this democracy and how our government works.
Mm-hmm. You've got those feedback loops. You do something, you get data, you adjust, and you just keep doing that, refining the process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the beauty and experience I'll tell you in this position. Those of you who want to take it on today, you know, we have to look at the way things are at the current time.
Sure.
But that can change, and we have to be flexible enough to come back and say, you know, wait a minute, we didn't take enough time on that. For example, it might have been something. That's why pretty much all these major issues we've had recently, we've taken tons and tons of time to study them out and review them, because I've learned that if you just make a rash decision without getting all the input, then you're back the next week trying to undo or redo. So, you know, we have been doing that. We have gone through the process, and I think you explaining that will help a lot of people understand that the Planning Commission sees these before the council ever does. So they have an opportunity there to come and voice their opinion. It doesn't have to be till just for council meeting.
Right.
But this follows a procedure and a cycle.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, it does take time.
And I appreciate you bringing that up. And that was really one of the important points that I wanted to make, is that the city council's process is not in a bubble. It's not in a vacuum. It involves so many different pieces of input into what you're doing. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate your willingness to. This was short notice today.
No, it was great. It isn't like we haven't been working on this.
Is there anything else that we haven't brought up that you'd like to communicate?
No, I would just reiterate the fact that the city council, since we are councilmen, and whether it's this issue or anything, we meet every single Wednesday at 5:30. For 4 Wednesdays of the month. And they're always open to the public. We encourage that kind of articulation and discussion and debate, because it makes for a healthier community.
Absolutely.
And don't forget the live streams on YouTube. You can catch them afterward, too.
Yeah. You can.
So, no excuses for not participating.
Right.
And I always make fun because Scott came from a background, but there's no admission charge for city council, and sometimes it's a lot more entertaining than Shakespeare.
There you go.
Just kidding.
There you go. No,
I tease Scott about that all the time.
It's great, because I really admire and respect my fellow council members, because they have different backgrounds than I have. But I think that's what brings strength to it.
Absolutely.
If we were all the same,
You
know, I want to make sure that we're vibrant and it looks good and we're healthy. But I don't understand all the water issues. I don't understand all the infrastructure. But I'm learning.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes us strong. So something like this short-term rental ordinance, I mean, this was all new to us.
Yeah.
You know, I've used Airbnb, I will say, before. But I didn't understand all the issues behind it. I didn't know what cities were dealing with until I was in that seat. And now I much better understand some of the issues facing those communities.
Absolutely.
And what really works is it's okay to disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable.
Absolutely.
And we found that if we can talk in a, you know, in a nice, calm, collected way, and everybody's opinions, and then we can find a solution.
Absolutely.
But if it gets all one-sided in a heated argument and nobody's listening to anybody,
then
things don't get
and
shut
the communication
down,
stops,
and things
so.
The communication stops, and you don't solve anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very well stated. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
I really am grateful for your time, and thanks for being here, Councilman Ron Adams and Councilman Scott Phillips. This has been Color Country Politics, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.